Today's podcast is brought to you by Visa. Whether you're a super fan or a food truck owner, Visa wants to help you pursue your passion by providing you with the most secure and easy payment experience possible. That's why they're continuing to make innovations from tapping to pay to push payments so you can get to where you would like to be. Visa, everywhere you want to be.
Say a sentence.
Oh, that's a bad beat for Jenna.
You guys are going to finish it. Here we go. Carson Wentz came into the season with MVP hopes, but his Eagles are 5-6. They're playing some shaky football, and they currently sit on the outside of the playoff picture, looking in. All right, Bart, the player with the most to prove the rest of the season is blank.
To me, it has to be Dak Prescott, right? Because we understand the road to the playoffs has gotten a lot more difficult, especially because if Philadelphia has, you know, I believe, the first or second easiest schedule there, and they have some tough matchups, and it starts today with the Buffalo Bills. So Dak Prescott's going to have to not only prove that he's worth the money, if he really likes and cares about his coach, he's going to have to try and take them at least to a Super Bowl berth. That's a lot of pressure.
Kurt?
I'm going with the guy we'll see today, Mitchell Trubisky. He was the number two overall pick in the draft. They traded four draft picks to get him. Teams don't want to admit they made a mistake when you give up all that draft capital to get a guy. He did okay last year. If they can get him back to okay, they won't go out and get a new quarterback, I think. They'll stick with him. But he hasn't been even remotely close to okay. And if they have to do it, tear it up and start all over again, it changes that franchise.
It's a great point on Trubisky. They can't tank because they don't have their pick because of the Khalil Mack trade. And this offseason, they have to make the decision on that fifth-year option. So he could be playing, whether even though the Bears aren't going to make playoffs, he could be playing for his future as an NFL starter. I'm going to go with the guy we know is an NFL starter. I thought I knew was an elite NFL starter. Just hasn't played like one this year, Carson Wentz. You mentioned how easy the schedule is for them coming up. Two against the Giants, one against Washington, one against Miami. Despite how mediocre they've been, it's still all in front of them. The team ahead of them in the standings is talking about firing their coach seemingly every day this week. Carson Wentz has to play better. I know he's dealing with a slight hand injury, but he seems healthier. He is healthier than he was last December or the December before. So I'm going to say Carson Wentz.
All right, good stuff. Speaking of guys with something to prove, despite reaching the Super Bowl last year, Jared Goff and the Rams are 6-5 and in a distant third place out in the NFC West. So, Bart, the team outside of the playoffs most likely to get into the playoffs is blank.
The Browns. You talk about the easiest schedule remaining, and the one tough game they have is a team that they've already beaten in the Baltimore Ravens. They just kind of match up with them well. They understand conceptually what the Ravens are trying to do. So I think they go on a run, and I think, you know, Baker Mayfield has finally settled down, and I think that they're playing good football, and I think they're going to be a sneaky team.
Kurt?
I'm going to go with the team you mentioned earlier, the Philadelphia Eagles. You look at the NFC playoff picture, it's basically set with the exception of who wins the NFC East. Yep. And you mentioned all the stats. The Eagles, their last five games, they play Miami this week, they play the Giants twice, they play Washington, and then the head-to-head with Dallas coming to them. They've got the potential to win all five of those games, which means Dallas has to go 4-1. Not only does Dallas play the Eagles, three of the other four games are against the Bills, the Rams, and the Bears. I don't see them sweeping all those games. That would put Philadelphia in first place and make the playoffs.
I think Philadelphia will make the playoffs. I think you're correct, but I'm also going to, I think you guys have the two teams that are outside in, so I could pick either one. I'm going to go with the Browns because I know how much it irritates Jenna Wolf. I don't know if you guys saw it, but Odell found the end zone this weekend. Baker's out here stunting on people again.
He's finally going to have more wins than commercials.
Right. They're going to, whether it's good or bad, they beat
We're
who they played. They beat who was on their schedule.
They'll beat Baltimore again?
No, I don't think they're going to have to.
Do you think they're going to beat Pittsburgh again?
No, I do.
I think there's two losses, and that's going to be 8-8. Well, they play better with their third quarterback.
Hodges might be their best option over Mason Rudolph, but I don't think they have to get to 10-6 in the AFC.
But they've got to get to at least 9.
I think they win every game except for Baltimore. I think 9-7. I think they got some tiebreakers. I think they get in. I'm going to go with the Cleveland Browns.
Disagree. I'm sorry. We're going to talk quarterbacks now. Russell Wilson is putting together another excellent season. 24 touchdowns, only 3 interceptions. Has him in the mix for MVP. Art Scott, the quarterback you'd most want to win one game is blank.
It's Russell Wilson. Now you talk about his 21 fourth quarter comebacks. So he's a guy that comes up big in a tough spot. We know that he doesn't have the best personnel around him, but he's an elevator. He makes everybody around him better, and he starts to use those legs and that athleticism, that football acumen. When the game gets tight, he's thinking clearly. Everybody else is panicking.
I love Russell Wilson, but how can you not take Tom Brady? I mean, you can go with all the stats you want.
He's eating nightshades.
It doesn't matter. He wins games. I mean, that's the bottom line. The numbers don't look good. The teammates don't look good. Blah, 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 blah. In the end, he wins. They're 10-1 this year. Obviously, he's got the rings. I don't know how you go against him, no matter what.
Historically speaking, obviously, Brady's the answer. But in 2019, they are 10-1, and he has been a passenger on that ride rather than the driver on that ride.
But he wins games.
The team certainly wins games, and he's the quarterback for those wins. I'm going to go with the guy who I think you believe, I think there might only be two people left in the world who believe it, is going to end up a Super Bowl champion this year, one Patrick Mahomes. People have, all of a sudden, we are so prisoners of the moment.
Yeah, all of a sudden,
Patrick Mahomes isn't even better than Lamar Jackson anymore. Patrick Mahomes, is he even the best quarterback in his division? Who knows? People are saying different things. In his career, there have been two games where Patrick Mahomes did not, in the fourth quarter, have his team in the lead or tied. Twice, so that's however many games he's played. 27 games, 25 times he's put his team either in the lead or they've been tied in the fourth quarter. Now, the defense has let him down, unlike Brady's defense, who's been carrying him. He's had to carry the defense. I still say Patrick Mahomes. He's the best player in the whole league.
In the league?
Yeah, in the league.
All right, on to the New Orleans Saints. Drew Brees and company, 9-2, and the favorites to win the NFC. But, Bart, the best team in the NFL is blank.
The Baltimore Ravens, right? You talk about a team that's complete. You talk about elite special teams, kicking, making a trade for DeAnthony Thomas, I believe his name is, you know, from Kansas City. Yeah, you know him very well. Field position. Talk about elite defense. Talk about scheme versatility. You got everything that you need, and you got something that the league hasn't seen in a long time. It's going to take them at least a year to adjust to it. Action Jackson's playing, you know, great MVP caliber football. How can you not go with those Ravens?
Can I go with code number one?
Sure.
Because I like the Ravens, too, especially the way their defense is playing right now, which nobody's talking about because we're captured by Lamar. But the 49ers, I think they're the most complete team in football, because if you look at the Ravens, I think if you stop the run, and somebody's going to stop at one game. I mean, you always have that game where you can't do your thing. I think the 49ers, they have other ways to win games. They can win by passing the ball. Obviously, both defenses, I think, will keep them in games. I think from top to bottom, though, the 49ers are probably the best.
And Kyle Shanahan is maybe the hot young coach everyone thought Sean McVay was a year ago. Nothing in Sean McVay. But I'm going to go with the team that I think people got thrown off their scent because they laid such an egg against Atlanta. The New Orleans Saints went 5-0 without Drew Brees. Mm-hmm. The Saints, now they are banged up right now on the offensive line. If those guys get back healthy, how many different ways can they beat you?
Yeah.
The defense is the best the last 3 years has been so much better than it was previously. They still have Drew Brees. Michael Thomas is going to have 150 catches. And, oh, yeah, by the way, Alvin Kamara, Latavius Murray, and they are in position where if San Francisco doesn't beat Baltimore this weekend, all of a sudden the playoffs could go through the Superdome. That damn near got into the Super Bowl last year, if not for the blown call. I think the Saints right now are the most complete team in the NFL.
All right, finally, the most important question of the day. When the Bears and Lions kick off today on Fox, what would you most like to be eating? Bart, the best Thanksgiving side dish is blank.
My wife's sage dressing. Little sage sauces mixed up in the dressing, little gravy. Yeah, I go into a coma in about 2 hours.
Okay.
I'm going right to the dessert, sweet potato pie. Mm. I'll have it as a side. I'll have it as an appetizer. I'll have it as a dessert. It doesn't matter.
It's a vegetable.
Those two things are good year-round at any time.
Yes.
I'm going to go with something that is only eaten on Thanksgiving, and I look forward to it every time. Green bean casserole. Get the little fried onions on the top. It's something, if you brought me green bean casserole any other day, I'd say, what are you doing?
Right.
But today, I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited for it. Your wife's dressing sounds amazing. All sweet potato pie is great. I'm going to go green bean casserole. Underrated side dish. Top seven side, we don't have time for it.
We'll have a potluck next time. Bring some pie.
Okay, next time. Well, there we go. I'm in.
You're all wrong. The answer is actually roasted vegetables with just a little bit of
that
oil.
Sounds awful.
I'm sorry.
Jenna's
inhale.
Four children. They don't know. You know how some families don't let their kids celebrate holidays with presents? Jenna doesn't let her kids celebrate holidays with food.
She does. Back here, first things first, joined now by Fox NFL Sunday's Jay Glazer. Jay, thanks for joining us. Former anchor. I've known you for 100 years.
You and I worked at MSG Network together many, many years ago when I was so broke that Strahan had to drive me back into New York City every single day. Like, I didn't have enough money to go from...
Take a
subway down to the bus to Giant Stadium and back. So he drove me back into the city every single day for 8 years. So I'm like, $28,000 in Lincoln Tunnel Fair.
Pretty much what it is.
The best in the business.
Thank you, brother.
Right here, Jay Glazer.
All right, Jay, let's dive in. The big news of the day, the Dallas Cowboys coaching quandary. Rumors have been swirling for the better part of, well, years. That Jason Garrett's on the hot seat. We went from season to season to what now feels like week to week. According to Mike Freeman, the Cowboys need to win the Super Bowl for Garrett to keep his job. Jerry Jones was asked about his level of commitment to Jason Garrett. Take a listen.
Let me tell you, no one in this country has earned the right to say I'm a Jason Garrett man more than me. I am his man. And we want the very same thing, and that's for our players to play at their very best. And we want his staff to coach at their very best. The bottom line is we get graded. I'm in business. I don't have to win the Super Bowl in business every year. I can come in sixth and have a hell of a year. But in this business, you've got to come in first. You've got to come in first. And so fundamentally, you've asked for something that's a very narrow window to begin with. I want Jason to get it done.
Jay, I got to ask, what do you make of this coaching situation in Dallas? Yeah,
well, this is not something new. We knew this going into the season because they had Jason Garrett on a one-year deal. This is it. They're letting him play it out. And you rarely ever see that where they'll just let a guy play it out because they don't want him getting questions asked about him being a lame duck, having lame duck status. And they said, no, that's what we're going to do. It's on you. You know, you have to put your chips on the table and you have to coach for yourself. And so he knew what he needed to do. And I think, you know, yeah, I think he has to win a Super Bowl, get to a Super Bowl. And I'll say this. The job the Joneses have done as a general manager has been fantastic.
Yeah.
They've changed. They used to go and say, oh, you know, hey, this guy's sitting there at the
Manziel,
you know,
right?
He's sitting there at number 20 right now. Oh, well, why is he still on the board four rounds later? Because he got all these red X's next to his name. Dude, you know, and they used to go get those guys that they thought that they could rehabilitate, and it just didn't work for the locker room. Instead, they started shifting gears and going, let's go after the Zach Martins and the Byron Joneses and the Jalen Smiths and all these guys and Leighton Vander Esch. They were going to build this locker room. So they know as a GM, they've done a phenomenal job, and they may have the best personnel of any team in the league, just, you know, all 53 guys. So this is not acceptable.
So a couple things. You said going into the year we knew this was the case. Tell me if I'm wrong here. I thought my feeling was going into the year that when he didn't get the contract extension, it was clear you have to go at least one step further. That if they had made the conference championship game, something the Cowboys haven't done this century, that would have been enough for Jason Garrett to be back next year.
I think it depends. Depends what happens. Look, football's an emotional game. So let's say you get to the NFC Championship game and you get blown out. And it's bad. They're going to sit there and, you know, you get emotional because that. And now here's the other thing, too, people don't realize. Because Jason's in the last year of his contract expires 3 days after their last game. So it's not like they have, hey, let's take a couple weeks really sit there and think about it.
I mean, and at this point, don't we know exactly who Jason Garrett is? He's had 10 years to prove that he was a Super Bowl caliber coach, and maybe he's a stabilizer. Maybe he's a very good coordinator, but I just don't think he's a very good coach. I don't think he can be the difference between tight games, situational football, making the great coaching decisions that you want from your head coach when you say, okay, he's going to make us better and make us punch above our weight.
Well, and you mentioned it. They're as talented as any team in the league. To me, the biggest question mark going into the season was Dak. Dak is playing the best football of his life. They've had some injuries, but they haven't been one of these teams where it's like, man, what are they supposed to do given all the injuries? They've been favored in 10 of their 11 games. Why do you think they're just kind of just barely treading water at 6-5?
I can't figure it out. I can't. And that's their frustration. They can't figure it out either. Look, you just talked about it, Dak. Dak and Jason were in a similar situation. Dak's like, I'm betting on myself. Sometimes you find out in life who you are. Dak found out who he was. Right? Back's against the wall. He's like, put it on me. You're going to see what you're going to get. I'm not going to sit there and falter and play not to lose. I'm going to go for it. And he did. Jason Garrett, on the other hand, he's in that same situation. And obviously, they're faltering way too much.
We keep talking about what we think the Cowboys should do, what Jerry Jones thinks. What do you think the players want? You think the players want Jason Garrett out of there, new fresh blood in there?
I think everybody likes Jason. Yeah. Jason's an incredibly likable guy. He's a smart guy. He's a professional. He's a pro's pro. He's played the game. He's very, very, very well liked. But that place is a different place. You know, your head coach, a lot of times, you're going to go down to the Saints, Sean Payton, that's it. That's the word down there, right? That's the word.
Yeah.
With the Cowboys, you know, it's not the word. He's in right. there, and he's just coaching for the Joneses.
Now, when I look at this team, you look at that they have a solid core, a veteran core. How can they go with a guy like Urban Meyer, or how can they go with a guy like
Urban Meyer?
It's been reported, or Josh McDaniels. How can they go with a coach that's an unknown commodity, knowing that they have a win-now team and going in with an unknown head coach?
Well, I think their hope all along was Sean Payton, and then we kind of blew that out of the water in week two when I reported that Sean just agreed to a monster contract extension with the Saints. Then they have to go back to the drawing board. There's two ways of thought there. A, let's go for a big-name guy that we know will take us over the edge, like when they did with Parcells. Or let's just go with a guy that we feel we can kind of control and mold, and that's, you know, the Garrett or the Wade Phillips or Norv or guys like that. They don't have a type. The type is who's going to be able to bring in and win with the talent that we have right now. So, I don't think you look at it like it's a Josh McDaniels because the quarterback doesn't need to get fixed. It's not like, per se, hey, let's go get somebody who's going to fix our quarterback who's this great offensive mind. That's not what you need right now. You need somebody who's going to get the most out of all those guys on that roster, that a very talented roster.
All right, let's go to the AFC for a moment. One of the few things that Jenna and I have a passionate disagreement about is I'm rooting for the Browns. Like, I know you root for maybe guys you know, but not individual teams. I like the makeup of the Browns. I'm friends with Odell. I like Baker, his swag, even though sometimes he can get in his own way. They obviously had as awful of a start to the season as they could have. Do you think, given what they have coming up, they can turn it around to make the playoffs? And speaking of coaching changes, anything short of making the playoffs, are they looking at a coaching
change? I think they've got to start showing a lot more discipline. I mean, look at all the stuff that happens over there. And yeah, it does start with the head coach. You knew there's going to be a lot of personalities over there. And the other problem is the head coach kind of touted himself as his offensive coach. He was a running back coach. He's not the guy to develop a quarterback. They need somebody to develop that quarterback. And yeah, all in one week, you have one guy tweeting out death threats while the coach is talking in the locker room. You have the whole Myles Garrett situation. You had something else that went on over there with.
It's a disaster in that locker room.
It's just one. I mean, it's the worst reality show in America. Coach. That's on the head coach. Head coach has got to make sure. Look at the Steelers, okay? Steelers had all those. The Antonio Brown's Le'Veon Bell, you never heard of it.
Kept it in-house.
Mike Tomlin should be given a Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah.
Right? You never heard of it. And they've never, ever had a losing season. And by the way, they've gone through coaches like crazy. They never had a losing season under Mike Tomlin. That's the difference right there.
You think even if they make the playoffs, Freddie Kitchens is gone?
No, I think they make the playoffs, he's not gone. But they needed to see, their problem was, and I told them, I went into camp, and I said, you guys' problem is you're letting everybody anoint you guys already, and you're buying in, and that adversity, you know, you're gonna have to face when things aren't going well. It's really show who you guys are. Well, adversity came, and they showed who they were, and it's not who you want.
Well, go ahead, Bart.
How attractive of a job, if Freddie Kitchens is let go, is that job? We understand the talent.
Very, because of the talent. Yeah, but it's culture.
Right.
You know, we went out there last year. We trained the whole team in our MMA program. So myself and Randy Couture and Chuck Liddell, and we went out there, and man, it was like, we did the Saints teams, we've done the Rams, the Falcons, but it was almost like they were okay being 1-31. Like there wasn't, it was very strange. And I'm there with a couple of world champions who know what it's like to sit there and, you know, break other people to win world titles.
Right.
And they were just like, we've never seen anything like this. This is unreal. This is like, this team has to, you know, they've got to hack like, man, our title's on a lot. We've got to, and it just wasn't. It was bizarre for all of us to see. And
who's the leader of that team then? I mean, because you think about
Baker.
He sets the culture of that organization.
And I think Baker should. I agree with you. I think Baker's a stud, but he needs to be developed. You know, he's too much of a wild guy out there. Somebody has to reel him in. Like Holmgren had to reel a Brett Favre.
And there are parts of Baker's personality. I think it's probably one of the reasons I like him, and I wonder if it's one of the reasons you like him, where
he's real. Baker's real.
And it is hard to tell the guy who's always legitimately been the underdog and always had people doubt him, and he's always been right. This time you might be wrong. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I'm going to walk on here. I'm going to be great. Then I'm going to walk on Oklahoma. I'm going to win the Then I'm going to go from mid first round pick to number one pick. Then I'm going to set the rookie touchdown record. And every time people are saying you've got to change the way you do things. And then this year, maybe he did need to adjust a bit, but he'd been like legitimately, but he'd been hearing that his whole life and not adjusted, and it worked out for him. I think that's been maybe where they did need a more seasoned coach, a more seasoned voice, someone in the locker room who could talk.
I'd take him under his wing. And again, development, that position is just as much about 6 inches between the ears as it is than what you got in your shoulders.
Back here, first things first, we're now joined by Fox NFL Sunday analyst Jimmy Johnson. Good morning, Jimmy.
Good morning. Good to see you, How's everybody doing today?
It's a long day for you. We love that you're starting with us.
Yeah, look at that. No. I didn't take any time with my hair this morning.
Oh, it looks great.
It was too early for me.
You're my inspiration, just so you know. You're my inspiration.
Oh, I'd love to see something like that on you.
No. I'd love to see something like that on me.
I like it.
I got a sponge for you after the show.
Okay. All right, Jimmy, if anyone knows the pressure of coaching the Dallas Cowboys, it's probably you. Of course, you dealt with that pressure pretty well, winning 2 Super Bowls. Well, Jason Garrett would love to be in that position right about now, but according to reports, he needs to win the Super Bowl this year if he wants to keep his job. Jerry Jones was asked about his level of commitment to Garrett. Here's what he had to say.
Let me tell you, no one in this country has earned the right to say, I'm a Jason Garrett man more than me. I am his man. And we want the very same thing, and that's for our players to play at their very best. And we want his staff to coach at their very best. The bottom line is we get graded. I'm in business. I don't have to win the Super Bowl in business every year. I can come in 6th and have a hell of a year. But in this business, you've got to come in first. You've got to come in first. And so fundamentally, you've asked for something that's a very narrow window to begin with. I want Jason to get it done.
If the Cowboys don't work out for him, he can easily go into motivational speaking, because I'm ready to run through a wall for that guy. Jimmy, what is Jason Garrett going through right now?
Yeah, Jason played for me, and I've known him for many years. We talk on occasion. Very intelligent. He's very focused on getting this team ready to play. You know, I don't think that this outside noise or even Jerry's comments has a whole lot of effect on him. I think he's just doing his job, trying to win a ball game. He's very even keel.
Now, after 10 years, I was there with Brian Billick after he won the Super Bowl. The message just got old. Right. Now, he's been in that locker room for 10 years. Is this message not getting old? Because it seems like he can't get this team over the hump. You know, so what is he experiencing now, trying to kind of reinvent himself? Because either the players change or the coach has to change. But they've been a model of mediocrity. How does he get them over the hump, and how far does he have to take them, in your opinion, to keep his job?
Well, hey, I'm not real sure about, you know, what he has to do to keep his job. But I think you're right. You know, after a period of time, I think the message does get old to the players. And I think the head coach has to change some things. But a lot of that goes on to the assistants as well. You know, I know with me, you know, I was always the demanding, you know, hardcore, you know, wouldn't give an inch to the players. But I had some assistants that would counsel them. I remember one time we played the Redskins. We'd already locked up the playoffs. And, you know, we were horrible and lost the game because the players just, you know, they weren't really into it. And so we got on the plane and, you know, the gal on the plane started to serve the meal. I said, no, they're not eating. They don't deserve to eat. I said, everybody sit down.
Nutrition's for champions.
I said, they don't deserve a meal. And so the next day, Dave Wannstedt came in and said, Coach, you're a little bit hard on them. You know, you really didn't even serve them a meal. I said, Dave, I said, when we lose, I don't care if it's a meaningless game. I want them to hurt. I want them to hurt. I don't care if they scream at me, they cuss me, they can't stand me.
Right.
I want to make a point to them that we will not accept losing. And so sometimes the assistants, they've got to take that role to change the message.
But when you were the head coach, while assistants could come to you and talk to you, the first, middle, and last word related to the Dallas Cowboys as far as the actual football team was whose? It was yours, correct?
Well, see, you got to understand, it's a different world today. When we first went to the Cowboys, Jerry borrowed $140 million. So he spent night and day trying to pay off that loan. So that was his focus, you know, trying to pay off the loan. Now, he actually came in my office after the first Super Bowl and said, hey, I'm free and clear. Good. You know, I paid it off.
My focus is back to you now.
But the reason I ask is I just wonder how difficult a position, whether it's Jason Garrett the rest of this year, whether he keeps the job or not, when the Cowboys, the head coach of the Cowboys is in a very unique position where he's not the biggest voice on the team.
Right.
And for certain players, particularly star players, you do wonder if they have a back door to the owner's office and if that undercuts the message of whomever the coach is.
I can't say because I'm not there. I know this. I know the players have to respect you. They have to, you know, look at you with credibility. And if they do that, you know, they're going to respond. And I don't know that there's a back door, you know, to Jerry. And again, I'm not there, so I can't really say.
Let me ask you one more question about this year's team. Because I don't think anyone denies the talent on it. And you watch them every week like we do. When you're watching them, what is the biggest reason that you think they have failed to have any success against the best of competition?
I was talking to Troy Aikman just a couple of days ago. I don't know that this team is mentally, you know, disciplined, tough, you know, demanding. It's almost like, you know, there's so much thrown to the Cowboys that, you know, the fans adore them, they love them, you know. It's almost an infection that they get the feeling that they're pretty good without accomplishing anything. And so when you have that type of feeling, I don't know that you're grinding it out. Hey, we got to win this thing somehow, some way. We got to win it. It's almost like they've already won, but they haven't won. But you're right. This probably is the most talented Dallas team that I've seen in a long time.
Which is why a lot of people say they're underachieving. The record they have now, but with their talent at all the skill positions, their talent on their offensive line, the defense that they have coming into every game, and they're just fighting, Nick calls it a pillow fight in the NFC East with the Eagles to try to come out of that division. Do you think Jason Garrett should be fired?
Well, Jen, I think the jury's still out because, you know, they should win against Buffalo today. I think it's going to come down to December the 16th when they play Philadelphia. Right. If they can win the division, which if they beat Philadelphia, they should.
Yeah.
Then as talented as this team is, in the playoffs, anything can happen.
And they'd be guaranteed a home playoff game.
Right.
Against a team that almost surely have a better record, but there'll be a home playoff game if they win the
division. Jimmy, the other big question in Dallas that's looming is contract talks for Dak Prescott. Dak entered the season without one since then. He's quietly led the NFL in passing yards. Jerry Jones said, quote, I'm not known as a guy that gets hand cramps when I'm writing checks. So vintage Jerry Jones. Well, he might have to write a record-breaking one in a couple of months. Do you think Dak's shown that he deserves to be the highest-paid quarterback in the NFL right now?
Well, you know, I'm old school. I don't think any of them deserve what they're making right now. Yeah. But, one thing about Jerry, I've always said he's probably the smartest businessman that I've ever known. And he really works it, and he does a great job of it. He will get Dak signed. They will sign him to a contract, and he will sign a record contract because he deserves it. So it will eventually get done. You know, I don't have any doubt about that.
So addition by subtraction, because if his deal is going to get done, we know it's going to be record-breaking, but what does that do to Byron Jones? So is Dak good enough to be able to lose those type of impact players throughout his team?
Yeah, Dak's going to be the main one.
Right.
We got to get his contract signed.
Right.
And then after Dak, you know, then you got to go, you know, Cooper and, you know, and some of the rest of them.
Right, we've seen it happen with the Ravens. We've seen it happen maybe now with Russell Wilson. But Russell Wilson proved that he can carry a team.
Right.
Can Dak Prescott carry a team? Because we've seen him come up short. Last week was his opportunity, I think, against the Patriots in a tough environment. This team was built to win that type of game. They're big in the trenches, physical offensive line, great receivers on the outside, and Dak couldn't come up with that defining play to beat a, you know, arguably the greatest quarterback of all time, but a very vulnerable quarterback.
Well, as you know, it is a team loss.
Yeah.
I think you got to take the New England game and throw it out. The weather, Belichick, you know, special teams, they had a couple of really mess ups on special teams. So there was a lot there besides Prescott. Okay. So I don't think you look at the New England game and say, well, hey, that's a defining moment for Prescott. I think Prescott can win a Super Bowl with the surrounding cast that he's got right now.
I'm curious philosophically because it is a different era in the NFL than it was a quarter century in a lot of different ways.
Right.
One of the reasons you guys were as dominant as you were was not just great coaching, but it was you guys had a Hall of Fame quarterback to go along with Hall of Famers all over the place. In the modern NFL, because the quarterback money, even if all the money's crazy, the quarterback money is 3x what you're paying almost any other position, right, aside from the single highest paid guys in individual spots. If you were building a team, do you think that you would be better off having a middle-of-the-road quarterback that is paid as such, or a $40 million a year guy that's not Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, a good but not MVP-level quarterback that's going to cost you your right tackle, your nickel corner, and your tight end? Because that's the math we're talking about.
Nick, I think in today's football, and it has changed, I think many years ago you could win with a middle-of-the-road quarterback and a great team. I think because of the passing game and the rules the way they are today, you've got to have a great quarterback to get you over that hump to win the whole thing. And so you got to pay the quarterback. And you know, the one thing people didn't realize, you know, we had the youngest team in the league,
yeah,
you know, when we won the two Super Bowls. Not only was it the youngest team in the league, it was the lowest paid team in the league. The whole key is drafting good players. You know, you can't build it with free agency. Draft good players. That way you've got your salaries down low, but you got to have that great quarterback.
And that brings us back to, I think, a lot of the frustration with the Cowboys this year is one thing no one can argue is they haven't drafted well. The last half decade, you look at their first round pick, basically every first round pick they've made since Mo Claiborne has turned into a Pro Bowler. They traded one away for a Pro Bowler and Amari Cooper. So you have that homegrown talent. So you have all of this homegrown talent. They didn't go out and try to splurge in free agency aside from the minor additions. And it's still like, why isn't this the year they get over the hump? That's the question I don't think anyone has the answer for, because I don't know about you, going into the year, my question about the team was about Dak. How
right.
good is Dak going
right.
to be? Dak, to me, has answered a lot of those questions this year. He's played the best football of his career, and they're still 6-5.
Yeah, I talked to Bill Belichick, you know, just before the Dallas game, and he said he didn't expect Prescott to play as well as he has played. He said he is more accurate than he ever thought he was.
Yep.
And so, you know, Prescott, you know, going into the year, I was the same way. I didn't think his accuracy was, you know, what it should have been, but he proved in those early games that it was. But again, you know, they lost that game against New England for a lot of different reasons, not just Prescott.
It's funny because I spoke to Bill Belichick just before the break, and he told me to say hi, so he says hi. I know you like the Cowboys today. Where do you think the Cowboys end up this year? We're talking about how you know, Jason Garrett and how long he can last. How far do you think they go?
Well, you tell me. Are they going to beat Philadelphia? And then I will answer that question.
It's a tough one.
I mean, if they beat Philadelphia, they're going to win the division. And they'll get in the playoffs and they're going to have a chance. If they lose to Philadelphia, it's going to be ugly.
See, but that's why it falls back to me, back on Jason Garrett, because it sounds to me like they have the talent, they just don't have the push that they need. Because what you need in any organization, any locker room, is they have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. And it seems like they're a little bit too comfortable in there to have that edge to get over the top.
Well, I made them uncomfortable, I promise.
Yeah, how many times this year would the Cowboys not have been eaten on the plane ride home, Jason? At least three.
There's
at least
three.
We may have canceled the plane and let them walk home.
Ice cream
wins. Listen, we have no idea where the Cowboys are going to go this year, seemingly. All we do is go through the schedule grid. We go game after game after
right.
game. We've had them winning and losing 16 different times,
Nick. But if
times,
they can't
Nick,
beat Buffalo today, then to me that is, even if maybe they still could win the division. But if you can't beat Buffalo at home on Thanksgiving, and you are then 0-5 against winning teams, to me that would remove any optimism that if they do sneak into the playoffs because Philly falls apart, that they can do anything.
The bottom line is how they do in the playoffs.
Yep.
That's the bottom line.
You
got to
get there first.
Yep.
Yeah.
Welcome back to First Things First. Look who's here, Eric Mangini, spending the holidays with us.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Aren't we the lucky ones?
For Coach Mangini being a big part of the show for 2.5 years and for our friendship, even if people who watch the show don't believe we're friends, we truly are. At least that's what I tell myself.
That was very sweet, Nick.
Good to see you.
Very thoughtful.
That was really thoughtful.
Daddy, you want to follow up?
Nope. I think he's pretty much done.
Made me feel like crap. It's all good.
Bart and I thought we were non-work friends. I invited him to my house for a party. He can't show up. And so now we're just, we're colleagues.
I've never gotten invited to the house for a party.
Thankful for you too, Bart. Good to see you, brother. Jenna, I see you every day, but I'm so thankful.
Coach, the 10-1 Niners have a tough task against the 9-2 Ravens. Sunday on Fox, Lamar Jackson's taking the NFL by storm this season, but San Francisco's defense holding opponents to a league-best 248 yards per game. Great defense against a great offense. Buckle up. Ravens safety Earl Thomas was asked if this game is just a preview of what's to come.
Super Bowl preview. You think the 49ers are going to the Super Bowl? It could be. Let's see. We just go out there and try to play the best football we can possibly do. And when the Super Bowl comes, whoever we play, they're going to be in trouble.
Coach, you buying this as a potential Super Bowl preview?
Well, I think whenever you write a check with a little under a third of the season left, it's a little premature from that perspective because you don't know where injuries are going to take you and the development of other teams. And there's a lot of things. So I don't love that aspect of it. But that is a very Baltimore thing to do. There's a lot of confidence in that group, and that's consistent with their personality. This could be a preview. It would be interesting because Baltimore would now be playing with the offense that they faced when they faced San Francisco last time in the Super Bowl. They'd have Greg Roman's offense, so that's an interesting twist to it. What I like about San Francisco in this matchup from a defensive perspective is not just the talent they have on the defensive line, but they do a pretty good job of mixing in pressures. And it's hard to match Baltimore's offense. And you hear a lot of coaches talk about trying to simulate his speed, trying to simulate how quickly things hit, the volume of scheme. So I like the idea of attacking with blitzes, showing them unscouted looks, making them try to adjust to you as opposed to trying to match up. And San Francisco will do quite a bit of that. So I like that aspect of it too.
I want to take this from the Baltimore angle because it is a Baltimore Ravens player who was asked, this is a Super Bowl matchup. He said at the end there, he's like, essentially, we know we'll be there. I'm curious to see who's going to be on the other side of it. And I really like Baltimore. And I think Baltimore is the team in the AFC with the least holes. I think New England has an enormous problem in the passing game. I think Kansas City obviously has a big problem in their defense, particularly their run defense. And Houston has a huge coaching issue and to go along with some other holes on their defensive side of the ball, especially since Watt went down. And those are the only four teams I think are viable contenders out of the AFC. So I understand why Baltimore's been so good as of late. And they've beaten Seattle and they've beaten New England and they've looked all. I get all of it. I do think we should slow our roll with the Ravens a bit. In this regard, the Ravens, it was not a year ago, it was a month and a half ago, that Kansas City got out to a big lead on them, and they didn't have a good answer. Cleveland, the next week, got out to a big lead on them, and they didn't have an answer. They then were in a dogfight that went to overtime with Pittsburgh, a Pittsburgh team that was just figuring out who it was. Like, we have seen Baltimore, I think they played a very close game against Arizona, if I'm remembering it correctly. Baltimore looks amazing right now. The two questions I have is, one is, are you peaking a month earlier than you'd like to, or are you going to be able to ride this wave the rest of the season, which is what they would need to do? And have they learned from what happened against Kansas City, what happened against Cleveland, and has Lamar, in a short period of time, developed enough to where if you are down two scores and you are forced out of your running game, and Lamar is developing before our eyes at a rapid pace, so he might have, that you are able to throw yourself back in the football game? I think those are legitimate questions. If I knew the answer to those questions, Bart, I'd be betting a lot of money on Baltimore to go to the Super Bowl because I think the other teams in the AFC are flawed teams.
Well, I think you should definitely be betting a lot of money, at least on them, to the AFC Championship game. When you talk about that Kansas City game, remember, that was before they acquired Jason Peters. Marcus Peters. Yep. That's before they really figured a lot of things out. And remember in that game, Harbaugh went for fourth down in the territory a couple of times early in the game because he had his analytical geek next to him telling him, go for it, go for it.
They they've been right on that this year.
But they've changed since then. They've evolved since then. And you talk about, okay, well, what happens if they get behind? Well, if they get behind, guess what? Their explosive part of their offense isn't just their passing game. It is their running game, because any explosive play in football is any play over 20 yards. They get that more than anybody through their runs on the ground. So I don't think anything's going to get them out of their running game. What's going to be interesting to see if San Francisco decides to play keep away from that explosive offense by moving the chains, because if it is any holes in Baltimore, the holes are the fact that they can't really, they don't have a tremendous front seven. That's why they went out and got Pecco at like 35 years old, so they can have a space eater. What the strength of this team is their ability now to match up against Kansas City, be able to play man-to-man and still yet have to help over the top. So I want to see how they decide to match up against Kittles. Do they take Jimmy Smith and say, we have an abundance of corners, let's put Jimmy Smith, our biggest, tallest, physical, you know, cornerback, and put him inside of the box? But when you have all these different defensive backs, it allows you to play complex coverages. You can bracket, you can play rat, you can play whole coverage from the other side with Earl Thomas, never really knowing where it goes. The question is, can Jimmy G recognize it, and can he beat you with his arm? Because I believe that Lamar Jackson has proven, without having any turnovers in the last four games, without even punting when he's in the game in the last two games, that this offense, in a tough environment in Baltimore, West Coast team coach coming to East Coast, playing at 9 o'clock body clock time.
Yeah, that's hard to do. And going back to your point about playing from behind, that's my biggest reservation right now, and I've said this throughout, is if the whole stadium knows you got to throw the ball, can Lamar Jackson go back and do that on a consistent basis? If they can play the game on their terms, they're really hard to beat. And what you're going to see, or what I'd imagine you'd see over the next 5 weeks, is people trying a lot of different things to slow this offense down. And sometimes what happens is somebody hits on that, and then it's a copycat league, and you've got to prove that you have a counter to that. So it may be a lot of max pressure. It may be maybe a 4-4 look with four down linemen, four linebackers, and saying, okay, see if you can run the ball on us, okay, against this front, or can you beat us throwing the ball and show us that you can?
The other thing you've talked about, your concern with Baltimore, is almost the elephant in the room when a quarterback runs as much as Lamar, is Lamar's health. And when you play San Francisco, and this is an underrated part of Monday night, Baltimore lost their center, I believe, for the year. Mm-hmm. He's done for the season. Now you're playing what I believe to be the best defensive front in the entire NFL. And you talk about it all the time. Pressure up the middle is what disrupts guys the most. The worst thing that can happen is you get pressure off the middle, you turn to escape, and Joey Bosa's there waiting for you, Eric Armstead or DeForest Buckner. How concerned are you, forget even Lamar running the ball, but Lamar against this defensive front and what they're going to be able to do on Sunday?
Well, this defensive front's like this, and San Francisco's front has a real edge against stationary guys. The problem is when they get against those mobile guys and they don't have lane discipline. Because these pass rushers, they're teeing off. They're up the field. Oftentimes they're behind the quarterback. But because they're so quick off the ball, they can get away with some of those voids that they create against stationary guys. When you've got a mobile guy, if you don't have absolute lane discipline, he can kill you. So to me, it's whether or not San Francisco can reel that in and actually keep him in the pocket, or are they going to create these huge lanes that he exploits?
Me knowing Baltimore, they always take your strength and make it a weakness, and they like to put people as the flavor of the day. Watch out for Richard Sherman happening to set the edge with those nub tight ends, and him being the overhang player, and then putting that fullback number 42 up him on the next level, see if he wants that smoke for a consistent basis. And watch Joey Bosa, see if he can play, you know, the fact that he's going to get double chipped, cut, just like they did Aaron Donald. They're going to make him a non-factor. Let's see how he responds, if he can stay consistent, because all they may need him to make is one special play, but he's going to have to earn it and deal with 85-80 regular plays where it's not going to be so glorious.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.